While we appreciate the attention the governor is giving to special education with today's proposal, our students cannot afford to wait years for the crisis to be resolved. That is the opening statement on the press release that came moments after Governor Lamont announced that he was going to make it a priority to invest in special education for the state and help out municipalities, because it's been highlighted that we need to invest more in our education, and specifically special ed really needs the investment, needs the resources, needs the time and the energy. So we have Kate Diaz here, who is the president of the Connecticut Education Association. And Kate, let's talk about your statement. So we're happy that the governor wants to focus on special ed, but it's not going to happen fast enough where students are really going to benefit from this. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. I mean, I think when we talk about increasing the investment 2 years down the road, it's just Connecticut continuing to kick a problem down the road and hoping it gets solved some other way. You know, we have a $100 million deficit in the special education funds for this past year. To continue to underfund and underbudget that just means that $100 million has to get picked up somewhere else. And a promise of $40 million 2 years from now really will probably barely cover the cost of the inflation on the, you know, the deficit that we have. So, you know, for us, I'm glad that we're talking about it. I'm certainly glad we are talking about cuts to education, but we're falling far short from the investment that we know we need to make. You know, some of our partner states are seeing increased investments of $400 million, $600 million, really understanding that now is the time to shore up public education if there ever was.
So, again, we are going to probably hear a little bit more. I'm not sure how much more. You know, when I look at the state of the state address, and we thought we'd get clarity on some of the things that the governor was really focused on, I kind of thought it was a very blanketed address, to be honest. I didn't feel like he really focused in or gave concrete solutions or, hey, this is what I want to see, this is what I need to see. So I don't know how much more detail we're going to get into the special education funding. But based on what you know right now, what would you prefer to hear the governor say instead of waiting till 2026, 27? Like, what would you want to see happen for this 2-year budget when it comes to education, specifically special education funding?
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to see is a commitment to fund what we know are the costs of special education, which is a $260 million, not $160 million. So I'd like to see a stop deficit budgeting for special education. But ultimately, we also know that we have an incredible educator shortage, more than 500 vacancies in special education across the state. So if we aren't looking at the infrastructure that supports educators, including salary, we're really going to fill to sort of work around the real issue, which is how are we supporting and funding education in a way that allows it to be sort of a thriving entity in all of our communities. So for us, we've proposed a $500 million 3-year plan to dedicate resources to increasing educator salaries and increasing the educators in the districts, right? I mean, we have 1,200 vacancies across the state. Like I said, more than 500 of those are in special education. If we don't direct resources at filling those vacancies, we're going to continue to perpetuate a problem. And we're going to continue to increase outsourcing, fees, the idea that we have to send students to third parties because we can't serve them in district. So I think there's really two answers to that, and they're not cheap. And I think that's the other thing our legislature is going to have to grapple with. These are not problems that are inexpensive to solve because we've waited so long to solve them.
And Kate Diaz, you know, color me, you know, dumb, I guess, if you want to say that. But I don't think we've ever done really a breakdown of where dollars would actually go. So when we say we need more resources and we need more money, we understand the deficit, if you will, being invested into special education. And like you said, the shortage of workers, certainly. But like, what would we do with that money? So you say $260 million. Like, what do you do with that money? Let's say the state says, hey, we found that $340 million in COVID relief that we didn't expect to find. We're gonna dump all that into special education and we'll leave the rest for something else. Let's just say that's the scenario. What do you do with that money?
So the $260 million is a reimbursement to districts for funds they've already spent. So when we talk about deficit spending, we're talking about districts who are already absorbing those, excess costs and cutting other services to their communities in order to accommodate them. So that part's just really a reimbursement, and it is honestly a flat funding of current good, you know, services.
That's a payback.
And would allow us, you know, yeah, it's really a payback. Now, ultimately, in the long haul, we hope to see us moving some of our services back in-house. We know that districts know their students best, can serve them the best, but, you know, these are expensive resources to build out. So ultimately, you know, we should be able to bring some of those services back into our local districts, which should be a savings. But that's years down the road in order to build out those sort of programs that we know we need. And so I think part of it is the investment in current services with the hope that one day those funds are moved and shifted into the local communities to support the development of local programs. But I think, you know, you're absolutely right that when we talk about adding money, like, for example, we talk a lot about the ECS formula mm-hmm. and the fact that it hasn't kept pace with inflation. So in real dollars, the proportional share of what the state contributes to education has actually gone down simply by inflationary adjustments. So we've seen, you know, the state's share go from like 49% to 36% over the last few years because we haven't kept pace with inflation. So for me, I think this is a twofold answer. One, we've got to commit to funding special education services. And two, we have to get money dedicated to the districts. Now, we've proposed in our legislative proposals a grant program that gives us 3 years to build out salary improvements, builds a little bit of time into this system so that we can make adjustments and advocate for the appropriate kind of contributions and increases to ECS. I know mayors have gotten together and said we have to, you know, really commit to funding the inflationary cost of education, because if nothing else, we haven't kept pace with that aspect, and we've seen staff impacted. We've seen reduction in force due to the rising cost of energy and all the other things that literally every other industry talks about. And so when we talk about this, it's really important to understand that these are dollars that go back into classrooms that we're advocating for. So, you know, I think people need to understand that really high quality education, to be sustainable, you can't do it really cheap. It's
right.
going to be an investment.
Ahead of the governor's budget address, we are talking to Kate Diaz, who is the president of the CEA, Connecticut Education Association. And we know that the governor has made it a priority to invest money into special education down the road. Kate Diaz, the other thing that we were talking about besides the money going into special ed was, as you mentioned, we have a severe teacher shortage and we need to invest in that. I find myself, though, always going down a rabbit hole because there are some big problems with why teachers won't not only take the jobs, but they won't stay in these jobs. And there are things that don't technically have to do with the actual job, things like housing or the taxes people pay to live in Connecticut or even the working conditions, for example. So what do you do when we talk about investing in this sector, trying to get teachers to be recruited and retained in school districts across Connecticut? How do we do that when there are all these other kind of outside factors stopping that from happening?
Well, I think we can address it in a number of ways. One is also about the affordability of going into the profession. Right now, it's about $1,300 or more in fees that it takes to get into education. So I think reducing the fees for entry, finding ways to reduce student loan debt for our student teachers, right, and paying our students as they do student teaching, these are all ways we reduce the debt coming out of college, because that's really, I think, a burden that you know, our student teachers have talked a lot about with us. So I think that's one facet of it, is figuring out how to make it attractive on that component. But I do think that we can marry a lot of these issues. When we talk about things like housing, a lot of states have developed what we call teacher housing, where they take some of these undeveloped properties and create affordable housing units that are dedicated to educators in those communities. There's a space for Connecticut to really think about that. You know, Hartford, we've had this conversation in Hartford a number of times. I know my very first year in office, Luke Bronin came to me and said, well, what do you think about this? And so we had talked about it, and I said, this is, you know, certainly a way that we help control the costs associated with living and working in our communities. So we would be open to that conversation. I also think childcare is another space. We can really look at the infrastructure of education and think about how it could potentially support a build out in childcare related services. And I'm not looking to displace our really important home care workers, you know, the people that do the great services in home daycare. But we know we have childcare deserts in places we do have schools. So is there opportunity to build that out? So, I mean, I think there's a lot of conversations that we can have that marry some of the concerns. You know, I don't think we're going to solve the energy crisis in Connecticut, but I trust that there are people having that conversation that are going to help figure that piece out. Connecticut's not a poor state. We talk about a $6 billion rainy day fund. They're looking at somewhere around $3 billion in different pools of surplus this year, and we found $330 plus million. So, I mean, I think that this is about where are we ready to commit funds. And we've seen, you know, Pennsylvania just double down on public education and added $600 million to the K-12 scenario. Virginia added $400 million. I think knowing that we have strong public education is an anchor in our communities, and that's an investment that, you know, we provide a lot more than just reading, writing, and math. We are a stabilization of our local communities. We provide school lunch programs. We provide community development services. We provide family services, the mental health services. So, you know, public education is a space that's worth investing in, but we do have to make it desirable for our teachers. So you're absolutely right. If we're not talking about working conditions at some point, we're not doing this right. So I think we've had a number of conversations about reducing some of the state mandates that create unnecessary pressures. And really editing that to make it a more manageable and desirable space, because when we over-regulate anything, it tends to not work as well as we'd like. And education is one of our most regulated industries. So giving people, educators, leaders, and schools room to breathe would be a great place for us to talk in terms of things that don't cost dollars. And in fact, could save money for our districts if we talk about reducing some of those, for example, standardized testing. If we even move to, as the superintendents recommend, an every other year system of standardized assessment, we're talking about millions of dollars saved throughout the state of Connecticut. So there's places for us to have conversations about improving working conditions and really making the field back to that real desirable, you know, community-based, service-based industry that we really want to be.
Yeah, and Kate Diaz, I think you highlight a lot of great, I think, solutions and, like you said, conversations that need to be had, and we'll see if they are going to be had after today's budget address with the governor. Thank you so much, Kate Diaz, again, president of the CEA right here on WICC. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Melissa.